Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Two Words with Taku. I'm your host, Taku Mbudzi. And today's podcast, I'm very excited to have the CEO of Auspicious Arts Projects, Selini Bateman. And yeah, thank you so much for coming to the show, Selini. How are you doing today?
Yeah, good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, pleasure. And before we start, I just want to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we're meeting today, the Wurundjeri people. We are recording in Nam, and I pay my respects to their elders past and present. And yes, so just a little bit about the podcast. For anybody who hasn't seen this before, this podcast, Two Words with Taku, has been running since 2017. And it's essentially me documenting my process and my journey of storytelling, being an artist, and also interviewing people who have, you know, knowledge, wisdom, tips, experience that they can share, not just with me, but my community of listeners who are fellow creators, writers, comedians, artists, just everybody. And so today's two words are auspicious writing. And I love that word, auspicious. It's so delicious. And so having you here today, Selini, could you tell us a little bit about Auspicious Arts Project and what they do, and then also how you've ended up being the CEO?
Yeah, sure. I would love to. So Auspicious, we actually celebrated our 30th birthday this year, which was quite exciting. And, you know, of that 30 years, I've been with the company nearly 13, so about a third of its life. But Auspicious was founded by John Paxnos, and really it came to be because he saw a need that independent artists needed a bit of help when they were getting funding for projects. And specifically what happened is a circus group got some funding to do a development, and someone really badly injured themselves during the process, and the group didn't have proper insurance in place, and so there wasn't sort of the protection of that group for sort of medical costs and ongoing wages and so forth. And so he thought, look, why don't we provide a framework for artists so that they, you know, get proper work cover, they have contracts, and they get sort of some assistance doing what a company would normally provide, but for independent artists. So that was 30 years ago. And at the time, he thought maybe we'll do 3-4 projects a year. And, you know, fast forward to now, and we do, you know, we look after about 1,000 projects a year, totaling around about 1,000 projects a year.
Wow. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary, you know, and that really, one of the wonderful things about Auspicious is that we work with artists who are emerging straight out, you know, beginning their practice, to establish artists who have been around doing things for 20, 30 years. Like, a lot of our clients have been with Auspicious longer than I have. And we also get to work on, you know, like it might be a weekend development or a 9-month tour or a big festival or a, you know, a small community work. We really get to work with artists across all art forms, across all stages of career, and across all project stage as well. So, you know, that 1,000 projects would be, you know, all, it might be one gig at a market or, you know, something that goes for years, something like APAM. So, you know, of that, we manage around, like, I think last year our turnover of projects was worth about $20 million. And again, that's sort of, you know, the smallest grant would probably be $2,000 and then the largest, you know, several million. So it's really diverse in scope and size of what we do, which makes it a really exciting place to work, and we get to interact with the arts on so many different levels. And yeah, so it really, and of that 30 years of going from 3 projects a year to 1,000 projects a year, that has all been through need. So we don't really market ourselves. You know, we do things like this or workshops when we get asked, but it's not like we're out there looking for clients. I think once people realise what it is that we do, you know, the word spreads, and we've grown through word of mouth. And yeah, because I guess what we're set up to do is offer protection and some assistance for artists, so that we make sure that everyone's covered by insurance. We make sure everyone gets paid superannuation. We put the contracts in place, and we really work with artists to build budgets for their projects. So, and that, I guess, is, you know, making sure a project is viable so that, you know, that an artist is supported to go, well, can you realise your idea? You know, and a lot of the time those conversations are, well, there's not enough money to realise your idea, or so what's the next steps? And that might be you need to streamline your idea to your resources, or you need to find more resources. So, you know, that's kind of in a nutshell what Auspicious does and where we came from.
All right, well, we're done. Thank you so much. That was so that was so thorough. And everything that you shared, I didn't realize. And I think having numbers to what you're saying you do makes it so much more, I guess it gives me a better understanding, because, yes, I've applied for, and I know people who are applying for those smaller scale grants, the 2,000s, the 5,000s. But then also I've worked in organizations or partnered with people who are, you know, the other side as well. And I think for me, you know, my understanding of auspicing and auspicing organizations from WA was it always seemed so daunting. It seemed like a very scary thing to have an idea and then go find somebody to then help you get the money. It just felt like a lot of, you know, a lot of steps to get the funding to make the thing. And now, maybe, 15 years later, now I contacted Auspicious about a particular project. I wanted to do some public speaking projects for young people through the council. And then, you know, the councils often say, you know, are you auspiced? And so there was a lot of back and forth. But then that's when I realized how helpful Auspicious was, because suddenly the person I was dealing with was sending me all these grants and all these opportunities. Have you thought about this? They were looking through my budget and going, make sure you pay yourself. And I'm like, wait a minute, wait, you care this much? Hello, what's going on? And so, even, you know, starting to look at my other projects, I was going, oh, yeah, of course. I now can think about, okay, which are the ones that I can try and do by myself, or which are the ones I can come back to Auspicious about. And yeah, the reason why I invited you is because I had a couple of other people say, oh, I'm really struggling to get funding for my projects. Oh, I didn't even know you can get funding. And then I went, oh, they don't even know then about you, about Auspicious and these opportunities. And so if you could explain, like, you know, a five-year-old, you know, there's this phrase, explain like I'm five. So what is the process if I'm an artist, I have this awesome idea, and I want to try and find some money to do it? What's the process from idea to meeting Auspicious to getting the money to doing it?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think what needs to sort of be clear in that process is that we don't fund projects directly, but we work with artists who want to fund a project. One of the great things about Auspicious and that really appealed to me when I first started working for the organisation is that we have an open door policy. So that means that we will work with, anyone who wants to work with us. And we do have a bit of a criteria, though, and that criteria is that we need to approve the budget. And because I think auspicing is something that any organisation that's a not-for-profit can do, because that what it means is that you step in and act as the legal represent, you know, you legally are the legal entity for an individual who wants to apply for funding. So as you may know, some councils, you cannot apply for funding as an individual unless you're partnered with an incorporation. So that's sort of where we sit. So when we work with artists, though, we see ourselves as more than that. We're not just a funnel for you to receive your funding. We sort of see ourselves as risk managers. So we don't want you to put yourself in a risky situation by trying to do a project with not enough money. So like those conversations you've had with Auspicious previously, like, you know, are you paying yourself, for example? So with that open door policy, we will talk with anyone, but we do say we have to approve the budget before the project is submitted for funding. And we will often work with artists and build a budget from the ground up. So if budgets are daunting, it's not something that you've done before, you know, one of our client managers will work through your idea with you and build the budget for the application. Now, with funding, success rates are very low. Depending on the grant, they can be as low as a 15% success rate. Some councils are more to 40 to 70%, so they're a bit more easy to get. So we know that money is hard to come by in the arts, so we don't charge any fee to help someone put their application together. We don't write the grant, but as I said, we'll work on the budget together. So often people will come to us and they might see a grant and say they can see that it's a $50,000 grant and they've got an idea and they want to apply for the full amount. Now, because we see so many grants all the time, we might go, look, even though they say it's $50,000, most likely they give $20,000. So let's have a look at your idea. You know, can you make it happen for that? Or do you need multiple grants? So we'll have that conversation about, you know, what's needed to get your idea to happen.
I love that. I love that. I think you've just mentioned you're essentially taking away the scary things or the things that scare artists the most is, you know, having to confront the numbers, because often you're so stretched and you're by yourself trying to, you know, cobble together these budgets and they can be daunting. So I love that you're saying that you actually help people work through those budgets, even from the ground up if people need it. But then also, the thing that's really stood out from what you said is being risk managers. And I think that's something that we also don't think about. You did mention the circus situation and the accidents, but also I think it goes, how I've started to understand applying for grants is whoever's giving the money has to trust that you are going to do what you're saying you're going to do, that you have the backing or the infrastructure or the systems or whatever it is to actually execute what that is. And sometimes, yeah, it's very hard to prove if you're just, you know, just started off or you're just trying to test something. And I think you sort of touched on how it's almost like there's a bit of, you know, connection points with having a grant writer or somebody to help you actually write the story of what you're doing or the concept, you as the artist and whatever you're bringing to it, and then that financial, legal, risk management backup essentially, yes, to make whatever application you're putting through more successful. So, yeah, I think that's really helpful to get that understanding and that clarity that you don't give the money, you just you help people work towards getting or putting applications through without also guaranteeing that they're going to get them, because
that's so right. Competitive. Yeah. And because we do have an overview, we might be able to say, look, this grant's not the right fit for you, but we know of another grant and maybe you should apply for that. And look, a lot of the projects that we work with too are not receiving funding. They might get a commission from a festival, or they might get some fundraising or some philanthropic money. So it's not us working on with artists on a project isn't contingent on a formal funding application either.
Oh, okay. So is it more like, do you do kind of strategic planning then? Is that what you mean in terms of looking at the different options or opportunities an artist can exploit? Or is it, feels chicken and eggy, like the artist can go, yep, this is my idea, I'd like to do this. And you might go, oh yeah, sure, that sounds great, or maybe try this. Or is it like how much direction, I guess, does an artist need to have when they come to you?
Really is individual and depends on the artists. A lot of the artists that we work with, we work on all their projects and have done so for years. So we've got a very long-term ongoing relationship with them. And, you know, so we do have those strategic conversations. Other projects will be a one-off, so an artist might come to us and say, you know, I've just got, you know, normally I can work on my own and that's fine, but this is a bigger project with a bigger scope and I need a bit of help, so it might be a one-off project. And those strategic conversations, they're possible if people come to us with enough time. So if you're saying this is due next week, then we don't, and that happens a lot.
we oh, don't have really?
Yes, the next day even. But we don't have a lot of time to sort of give that strategic thought. But if someone comes with us with a lot of lead time, you know, we can't always do that because there won't always necessarily be other opportunities that are a good fit. But, you know, we do have a good sense of what's out there. And, you know, if it's a small project, we might say doing some fundraising might be a better path for you, or but often a project will be a mix of incomes. There might be a grant and some box office and some, you know, fundraising. Or, but in terms of that chicken and the egg, you know, people might come to us because they did get a commission with the festival and need some help, you know, because we also, because we sign the contracts on behalf of the artist, we also have another eye to look through the contracts and make sure the artist is being looked after in those other relationships outside of funding.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. It's kind of funny not having heard of this before. I mean, literally before this year, specifically for here. But then I'm really excited to share that with other artists who I know, even just to be able to have a conversation with someone about a project or an idea, and then to hear feedback from, you know, the client managers about, what the lay of the land is as well. Sometimes it's quite isolating when you've got an idea and you're not sure if it will work, and then you hear, oh, yeah, people have done that, you can do that, or vice versa, you know, being really ambitious and sometimes needing those reality checks, which can be very sobering. Guilty. And so you mentioned that you've been with Auspicious for 13 years, and, you know, looking at the work you've done before, you've produced, you know, animated kids TV shows, cabaret, and so was that under the Auspicious banner, or has that been before? What has your personal artistic journey been like?
I've been reflecting on this today, because, you know, we discussed that might be one of the questions, and, you know, it's interesting to reflect back on a life and, you know, what's career and what's personal journey and how they intersect. And, you know, for me, as now being the CEO of Auspicious, I don't actually have any formal training, and I don't have a degree, which is quite unusual. You know, so I feel like I'm very fortunate that I've, you know, worked my way into this position. And I was trying to think of then, well, without that formal training, how did I end up here? And for me, I think when I was, you know, growing up as a child, my family were artists and we travelled a lot, and I missed a lot of school. I didn't go to school for years. And so I have never really had a deep respect for that formal process of education. And I think in some ways I've always worried that has held me back, but I think in fact it gave me opportunities to find new and different ways of doing things. And for me, you know, in the 90s when I was a young woman in my 20s, I was very involved in the electronic music scene in Melbourne, and there was a lot of creativity there and a lot of expression and a lot of freedom. And a lot of those people that I knew from those days went on to form dance companies in Melbourne and performing arts companies. And I was always very, you know, as much as I like the music, I love that creative expression and the performance that came out of that very underground scene in Melbourne. And when I was young, I actually did a business course called the NEIS program, which I think still exists in some form, that you can do if you're on, at the time I was on the dole, as they called it. And I did that business course and ran a little business for a year, which was not successful. But what came out of that is I learned those finance skills, and I learned how to do a business plan, and I learned how to do bookkeeping. And those skills out of that course is what has shot me off into doing the sort of work that I do now. And then I went on to be a producer and worked in an animation studio and the other things that you mentioned. But I really learnt those skills on the run, and I discovered I had an affinity with numbers. I've always loved the arts, but I have no artistic inclinations myself. So to be able to wrangle spreadsheets and wrangle budgets and understand finance and understand the business end of it has allowed me an opportunity to work in the arts, which feels really special because I love it. And, it's a way I can contribute without being artistic myself.
Well, I have to say, for someone who works with numbers, that is a gift. That is an art form in itself, because sometimes, we take it for granted that people can see and read things or discern things in spreadsheets that many of us can't. And then you talk about, running a small business. That in itself is a whole, that's a whole nother, skill set. And I think very valuable, which is something that I often try and talk to people in my community or other people who are considered new or emerging in different industries or art industries, whether it be publishing or the screen industry or podcasting, whatever it is, that some of those skills that you think might not count for something are so useful once you bring them across. And then if you find the right people to back you up or to support what you already know, then it just makes the world of difference. And in my past life, before I started, being in the film industry, I was working as a technical writer in engineering, construction, mining. So I was doing all these reports. I was writing all these multi-million dollar proposals and tenders. And I think it only really clicked maybe a few years ago that, wait a minute, I know how to write. I know how to put these things together. So why am I not doing it for myself? And it's still a learning process and recognizing that, you have to find the help or find the people who are equally passionate about it. And I think hearing you and your story, being raised by artists, so you've got that heart for artists or an empathy or a sympathy, I don't know, whichever. So that then, when somebody's coming to you and going, oh, I don't know how to do this budget, I think that would definitely serve you so well in that role. And so what do you think makes a good CEO? I'm just curious, just to kind of throw a curveball. What do you think makes a good CEO running an organization like this with creative people and, maybe sensitive hearts, maybe big egos or whatever? Like, what do you think makes a good CEO?
That's a great question. I feel like I spend a lot of my time my particular style is very much one of empathy and caring. I think that's something that I do well and that's important to me. So that's extended to the artists that I work with and also to my team who supports the artists. And also I think, it's a balance of having that and then also having an eye on the future and sort of being able to sort of see where things are going and, what's needed to we specifically are around to support artists. So trying to sort of see, what sort of support are artists going to need in 5 years? Is that the same as what's needed now? Mm. And trying to sort of, have a bit of strategic direction of looking forward to those things. So it's sort of, one eye on now, one eye on the future. And to me, having that care is crucial. Would that work in another organisation? Maybe, maybe not. I have a particular trajectory of, I've been with Auspicious for 13 years and I've been the CEO for 2.5 years. So, my life has very much revolved around this organisation for a long time. So I don't know if that would be the right skill set for another CEO in another organisation. But, I think that it's important for this one.
Yeah, and even when I called that first time and I was calling to speak to the client manager and you were on the call as well, you were so friendly and so open. I was like, wait, that's the CEO? Okay, great. Like, All right, let's just chat, because I think it makes such a big difference having that openness as well, so people feel safe enough to come through with, you know, their ideas. I mean, artists like Erykah Badu is always saying, I'm an artist and I'm sensitive about my shit. It's like, yes, we all are. And, you know, when we come and we want to get that support, we want to feel like, you know, the people at the very top, then it filters down that care and empathy. And, you know, talking about the future, I was really curious to hear your thoughts on the federal government's national cultural policy, because that's been such a big, it was such a big process to get it through, and people, you know, all sorts of organizations were submitting. I was part of the Australian Children's Producers group. We submitted something as well. Everybody's kind of lobbying, telling the government, yes, artists are workers, yes. And so I'm curious what your thoughts are on the policy, and also just the reality of how it really will impact artists, like all artists of all, from all backgrounds.
Yes, good question. I think that it's really encouraging, and I know that it filled a lot of people with hope that this current government put together the policy, and looking through the five pillars that support that policy, I feel like a really, you know, grounded and good and you know, right for this time. That said, I feel like it's easy to say what's important and you know, what's driving what they're going to do, but the proof will be in the pudding, and I don't feel like the pudding is out of the oven yet. I really hope that they achieve what they're proposing. For me, as I said, you know, my focus is on that sort of centrality of artists and making sure that artists are looked after, you know, as workers. Like, you know, obviously that's a lot of what Auspicious does, and that's what we're about. So I've got a particularly keen eye on that. You know, I put in a submission, as lots of people did at the time, and, you know, one of the things that I thought was important, and I know a lot of other people did too, was a universal basic income, and that was missing from the they did mention that a lot of people commented that they thought a basic income was important. You know, I don't know what would have to happen politically in this country to bring something in like a universal basic income, but a lot of people have spent a lot of time thinking about the issues that there are and the insecurity of being an artist, and you know, it just keeps coming back to a universal basic income. I think it's a shame that there's not the political appetite to bring that in. And I wonder, you know, with that thing of keeping an eye on the future, you know, would that be possible in 5 years? Would that be possible in 10 years? I don't know. The other things that I sort of the other things that we're seeing that are issues for workers is that there is a huge shortage of production and technical staff in Melbourne, in Victoria, in Australia, and I think more broadly, but especially after COVID, a lot of production managers, stage managers and technical crew, they weren't properly supported, they missed out on JobKeeper, they left the industry and they found jobs that paid better. They didn't have to work on weekends and were more secure. And so it's I've seen that as a huge problem. So there's that. There's also a big lack of independent producers in Melbourne, and there's less and less because they are also getting sucked up into secure work. Why wouldn't they? If you can be paid well and have a secure work at the Arts Centre or another organisation like that. But what that means for the artists is that they don't have that support base of production and producing crew. And so I see a lot of artists trying to fill the gaps and do those jobs themselves, and it's leading to burnout. It's not safe. They've just got too much on their plate. So I am very keen to see what this policy will do to, you know, those things need to be addressed as well, because if you strengthen that base, that's going to support the artist, and then the artist is going to be in a better position. So, I hope that comes out of it.
Yeah, and even just you talked about having that support, but also having the space, the mental space and the time to create good art, because also, you know, if people are working, you know, 2-3 jobs just to get by, sometimes the art does suffer as well. And I think I found, you know, the policy was great. It was great to just see that wording, and for them to acknowledge artists as workers was just such a big thing to say, yes, it is actually real work. When people come home after their day at the office and they're watching a show or they want to go to the theater, people have done the work to make that possible for everyone to enjoy. But really feeling as if I also want to see it really filtered down to every artist. You know, I think the second pillar is say, you know, a place for every story. So that means, you know, really doing the work to support every story. So whether it's, you know, artists with disabilities, or whether it's, you know, people who speak different languages or different cultural groups or different whatever it is, then providing that backup so that they can do it. So same thing with, you know, having the universal base income, but also whatever other things they need. And I feel like that conversation hasn't really been had. Like, hey, you want to make something? What do you need? You know, and it's on the artist to be proactive, to go and find that information, but it should be easier to access. Mm-hmm. So even, for example, finding Auspicious, you are literally one of those resources or places, or not even, you're one of those organizations that people actually should know about, should know that, oh yeah, you can go there and get the help or support. And it's also a journey and learning how to navigate those artist systems, because I still feel like so many people are not able to access them, you know. So we'll see what comes out of it, but really good to hear your thoughts on that. And so then, is there anything else that you'd like people to know about Auspicious, or, you know, things that maybe people don't know about the organization, or things people really should know? Anything else that comes to mind?
I mean, I guess it's important for me to let people know that, you know, we are really an organisation there to support artists, and that means that, you know, it's fine to ring up and ask a question. So that might be, you know, I don't know how much I should be charging, or I don't know how much I should be paying somebody, or, you know, I've got this contract and it's got a funny clause in there. You know, there might be times where we can't help because, you know, we've got a funding round about to go in and we've got 100 applications that we need to wrangle before the deadline. But if it's outside of a round, you know, we'll always happy to share that information. So, you know, just to encourage people to, you know, have a look at our website and the resources there. We list all the grants. We have information about, you know, tax or superannuation or budgets. You know, there's stuff there that you can access. Just to encourage people to reach out, and, you know, it may not necessarily develop into a relationship for that project, but, you know, there's a good chance we'll end up crossing paths down the track because you might be engaged to work on someone else's project, and, you know, we might contract you in that way. So, yeah, just to reach out.
Yeah, that's really great. I think even you mentioning all the resources is a reminder to make the time to go through that information. And like you were saying, you know, people trying to apply for a grant tomorrow, just going to smash it together. I have been guilty of that. And you see the results of that. It doesn't feel quite right. You don't get it, and all sorts of things. But also making the time to sit with whatever that art practice is and starting to do that research, and hopefully finding those places, those people, and those tools that can help you put it together. Because I think what I'm learning now is, you know, good art just takes time. It's the time to listen to it, to sit with it, to try. And not every grant or not every opportunity will be for that thing. So to also trust where that thing is also nudging itself towards.
Yeah, and we absolutely find too that people going through the process of applying for a grant can also, even if you don't get it, it can really help you consolidate your ideas. Mm. And, you know, there's some rigor in there of, you know, working out if the idea is, you know, has the legs that you thought it might. And sometimes people go, look, I started the application and I realized I actually need more time. So I'm not going to apply this round. You know, I'm going to give it a bit more time and space. So, yeah, I think that's a good point.
And can I just ask, what industries do you cover? Is it, yeah, I'm just curious without assuming.
Yep.
What kind of industries?
It's a good question, and we talk about this often in our office, you know, and about who, you know, who we work with, and what we've come up with is a criteria that the project basically needs to be one of two of these three things. It needs to be an arts grant or an arts project or by an artist. The reason that is, so for example, we got someone contact and said, you know, I want to apply for funding to make a book on trees. And so we sort of started talking to them, but it turned out they weren't an artist. They didn't see themselves as an artist. They just wanted to do this, and they wanted to apply for Creative Australia to do it. And, you know, in that instance, it's like, well, you know, it's not, you're not an artist, and it's not really, this, but it wasn't really an arts project, it was more of a science project, but it was an arts grant, but so that wasn't the right fit. And we also, we get asked a lot to, because what we do is so useful for people, we get a lot of people from other industries, especially from the sort of welfare and community development sectors, wanting us to also auspice them. But that's not our area of expertise. Our area of expertise is the arts. So if it's an arts project and if it's an artist, then that's the criteria, basically. But that could be any art. That's live art, cabaret, dance, circus, painting, writing, arts festivals. So there's not one, you know, it's more sometimes you go, is this an arts project? And it can be a bit hard to tell. So, you know, sometimes there might be someone who wants to do a television show on community TV about soccer. And then we go, well, it's TV, so that's kind of an art form, but soccer's a sport, so, you know.
Okay. Oh, that's actually interesting to hear that criteria. And so with just kind of pushing into the film and screen art forms, is that then if a filmmaker wanted to come and get auspiced for something, can they still come and have a conversation with you? Or is it, what's your criteria around screen content? Because there are so many agencies and all sorts.
Look, we auspice quite a few short films. Generally, when they're self-funded, there are some funny rules around the funding bodies that fund film, like Film Victoria and Screen Victoria now and Screen Australia. They don't really allow the auspice relationship as part of their funding applications. So as a result, we don't do a lot of bigger projects. But we do get artists who might get a bit of funding from a council, or they do their own possible campaign or their own fundraising for a film. And in those instances, then we work with, you know, artists making short films. We tend not to do so much documentaries because we don't see that so much as an art form. But, you know, it's always a conversation.
And can you tell me a little bit more about crowdfunding? Oh, sorry, my daughter. Yes, my daughter wants muesli. But I was asking, I'll just go back to ask the question about the relationship of people wanting to crowdfund and how auspicious fits into that.
We work on projects that get funding from all sorts of different sources. So that might be from a grant, that might be a commission, or they might do fundraising themselves. There's a few different platforms that you can use to fundraise. So crowdfunding is something that, you know, probably we've all contributed to somebody's fund, possible campaign or Kickstarter campaign, something like that. And that's a great way. The benefits of doing crowdfunding is that it's much faster than applying for grants, because you apply for a grant and then you've got to wait for 3 months, and then if you don't get it, then it's another 6 months before you can apply again. It can be a long process. So if you've got an idea and, you know, maybe you only need $5,000, it might be a more successful route to go down to do a fundraising campaign. We find that fundraising campaigns also work well to top up the budget of a project. So you might have received some funding but not enough, and you need a little bit more to get over the line. So they're the benefits of fundraising. The downfalls are that it really does rely on your own networks. So basically you're going to have to reach out to your friends and your family and all your loved ones and your colleagues to give you money, and that can be uncomfortable to do. And also generally people have one crowdfunding campaign in them, you know, before, and then they,
yes,
they can't do it again. And the other side of it is that, you know, if everyone's donated to your campaign, often it's a bunch of other artists, and then when their campaign comes around, you need to donate back to them, and it doesn't really bring any extra money into the broader community. There are, as well as possible, there is another way of fundraising which I'm a big fan of, and that's through the Australian Cultural Fund, which is run by Creative Partnerships Australia, which actually has just recently gone back into being managed by Creative Australia. They have a similar platform to crowdfunding. So, you know, you put your target up there and then, you know, it's still up for you to drive that campaign and get people to donate to it. But the difference is that everyone who donates to your campaign gets a tax deduction. So it's just like if you donate to the Red Cross or another charity, your donors get, you know, get a tax deduction for when they do their tax. So that sort of feels a little bit easier than to ask people to donate. But also the Australian Cultural Fund have some good programs. They also once a year have a grant called Match Lab. And so you can apply for that like you do a grant. And if you're successful, then they match dollar for dollar the amount of money you raise. So if you raise $5,000, they give you another $5,000. And then it's, you know, much easier to go to someone and say, hey, if you give me $100, I get $200 and you get a tax deduction. So yeah. I think that's a good model. But I think where people go wrong with any sort of fundraising is they don't realise how much work it involves. Like, it's not just a set and forget. You've actually got to really go out there and spruik the project and, you know, it's a job. It's a big job.
It is, and I have been burnt on some crowdfunding campaigns where you think it's the thing and then you it's quite disheartening if you don't have that passion to push, like you said, or if you don't have a really compelling pitch, because you're essentially pitching to people who care about you to also give their hard-earned money. And I did one for my film. I was raising money to go to New York for the festival, and I think because I was so passionate about it and I just really wanted to go and people really cared, it made it a bit easier to do, but I still felt so vulnerable, so exposed, waiting for each, you know, contribution and just, yeah. So I think that's really good feedback. All right. Can you give me 5 more minutes?
No.
Hi, Selene. The joys of being a working artist mum.
No problem at all. Hello.
All right. I was just going to ask, where can people find Auspicious as well?
Well, we're based in Collingwood Yards in at the Contemporary Arts Precinct there. But you can find us online at auspicious.com.au.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much, Selene, for this chat. And thank you for your understanding as well. And that's it for today. Thanks so much for listening. With that cameo from my young daughter, I hope it didn't bother you too much. But yeah, that was Selene Bateman from Auspicious Arts Project. And if you want to hear more about the podcast, what we're doing, what I'm up to, you can find us at twowordswithtaku.substack.com, or we're on all the socials at twowordswithtaku. Thanks, and speak to you soon. Bye.